You're listening to Health First, heard across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
Well, we're back with Jean Blake. She is the CEO of Parkinson's Society of British Columbia. And Jean, as I was saying before, this show is broadcast right across Canada in a variety of different community radio stations. And I was wondering, what happens when people first get Parkinson's disease? Like, what happens in the sense, what do they first notice typically? And then, what is there a series of things that happen in their body that does the disease follow a certain path?
Well, sometimes the doctors tell us if you've seen one Parkinson's patient, you've seen one Parkinson's patient. It can be very individualized, but I do think about in 70% of cases, it is usually that tremor that happens when somebody's at rest, so a repeated shaking movement, either in one arm or one leg, and usually on just one side of the body. And for a lot of people, that may not be particularly disabling or annoying, so sometimes it's not until a family member will indicate that there's some issue. More often, it would tend to be if they start having difficulty moving. I mentioned that without the dopamine messaging to the muscles to move, it can create stiffness. And so sometimes someone might think they had a frozen shoulder, and when they actually go in and get diagnosed and get that surprise diagnosis of Parkinson's disease, it can be quite a shock. It can be a balance issue. But more often than not, it would be that resting tremor or some rigidity or inability to move. There are things like reduced facial expression, too. So it's not that the person is becoming a grumpy old man or woman, but it's that, again, muscles in the face can no longer move so easily. And I mentioned earlier that it can affect a person's voice. It can become very, very soft. Or it might be that their handwriting has become very small and very cramped, again, because they're not able to move their hand in very large movements. And so it might be small things like that. Or I mentioned sleep. Sleep can be a really big issue, whereas you and I, when we go to sleep, we might have quite vivid dreams, but we don't act them out. And with this is a kind of a strange backward thing where the inability to move, it turns around in somebody who's got Parkinson's at night. They can actually, instead of being kind of frozen in their dreams like you and I, they may act them out. And so if they have, if you're having a nightmare and they're fighting back, it may not be a very comfortable situation for the bed partner. And so it may be those sleep issues that drive somebody to a doctor, first of all, and then they, after examination and discussion, would determine the diagnosis of Parkinson's.
How long does it take for the progression of the disease in terms of, from the time maybe you have a tremor to typically, the time where it's really debilitating?
Well, it's so individual, and again, most people probably have had the disease for 8 years plus by the time they get a diagnosis, and about 70 to 80% of their dopamine-producing cells will have died by that time. It depends on what the individual is doing in terms of their daily activities as well. We're finding in the early 2000s, people often were just told to go home and rest. They frequently didn't even get a referral for physiotherapy. The last 5-10 years, the research on exercise has just really changed things. We know that exercise can be really beneficial for helping people to manage their symptoms, in particular very specific types of exercise that help them to take really large movements, rapid repetitive movements, deal with balance, build endurance and strength. Those folks that have been habitual exercises and exercised all their lives, there also seems to be a slower progression of the disease. So we really are promoting exercise both for helping people to manage their symptoms and also there is increasing evidence that it does delay the progression of this disease. Now, if you're further along already, if you're already restricted to sitting to a wheelchair or something like that, there are some physio exercises to help you build some upper body strength at least, and there is also some increasing evidence that that may be helpful to assist with even just some of the activities of daily living, like being able to button a shirt or brush your teeth or shave, those kinds of things. So it's hard for me to say. We've got people who have been living really well with this disease for 20 years, and others where it has progressed more quickly than that.
You talked about, you know, some specific types of exercises. You mentioned, like, large, rapid movements. What are we talking about? What kind of exercise would be, you know, that specifically, what kind of exercise would you be talking about for people with Parkinson's?
So there are two programs that have been developed by physiotherapists through research that are specific to Parkinson's, and we've used both. There's one called Lee Silverman training, and it's really about big movements. Then there's another program called Power or Parkinson Wellness Recovery. Same type of thing. It's about really, because the body starts doing these small kind of, I mentioned the tiny handwriting, small shuffling movements for walking. So we want to, first of all, rebuild some strength and some endurance. And so really, both of these programs promote using really large repetitive motions. You've probably seen on the news a number of times lately, there's a program promoting boxing, and there's one in the States in particular where they're doing training for boxers in Parkinson-specific boxing, where it's really about rapid repetitive movements, again building that strength and endurance and the balance issue, because boxing you have to move back and forth quite rapidly with your feet too. And then another program that we've been looking at and are actually doing a train the trainer here in Vancouver in September is called Dance for Parkinson's Disease, and again that's been based on specific classes that focus on Parkinson's disease issues like building better balance, motor skills, physical confidence at the body. You also sometimes we'll see someone with Parkinson's with more of a stooped posture, and so it's getting them more upright and, again, big movements. All of those programs also have a really positive effect on cognition, and we see about maybe 60% of people with Parkinson's at some point in their life will develop depression and anxiety, so exercise is really good for dealing with that as well.
And do you see with this exercise, with the exercise programs, a slowdown in the progression? Is it measurable like that, or is it, you know, what do people with Parkinson's notice when they start adding this exercise if they haven't been exercising before, or if they are, like you said, you know, if they've already been exercising all their life, increasing it or changing it a little bit? What are they noticing?
They usually do see some better symptom control. So, again, being able to walk more easily, it transfers to a variety of the small movements, the activities of daily living that I mentioned earlier, like brushing your teeth. Translates into just better quality of life. We ran an awareness program here just a couple weeks ago called the Parkinson Movement, and we're demonstrating a variety of exercises that people with Parkinson's might want to take part in, basically the three I've already mentioned. And I talked to one lady whose husband had been doing the power classes, the Parkinson Wellness Recovery, and she said all that I said, that he was able to move more freely, but almost more importantly was that he felt so much better about himself, that they were getting out and seeing friends and family much more often than they had been. So it really rebuilds quality of life as well as some better physical abilities.
Well, I imagine that psychological effect of not having your body work the way you've always had it work can be substantial.
Yeah, it, can be, and I think the depression can come from that, but it also can come from the actual chemical changes in the brain, too. So this is, we think that it's helping rebuild some components of the brain to some degree. It's called neuroplasticity, where the connections in the brain may actually be rebuilt. And, of course, you have to keep doing it. There's also additional hormones like adrenaline, serotonin, and so on, that we there's some research that these may be temporarily assisting the dopamine or replacing the dopamine. So, of course, like exercise for anything, you can't just do one dose. You have to build it in. And so we really recommend that people find something that they enjoy doing and that they feel that they will be able to stick with on a regular basis, because this is a lifelong approach that needs to be taken.
During the break, Alan Wishart, our producer, was talking about his father when he had Parkinson's, and he was saying that he was on a cocktail of drugs for Parkinson's. Is there any of these drugs that are really showing positive results in terms of helping?
Levodopa is still the mainstay. It's the one that will, if you've got Parkinson's disease, it's going to make a difference, and it's almost, it's the gold standard, basically. There are a number of other medications that have been introduced, but I'm not a clinician, so I can't really speak about them, but levodopa is certainly the mainstay of keeping people moving with Parkinson's, along with exercise.
Jane, we're almost out of time, and I'm wondering if you just want to sum up what we've been talking about today and give people some information where they can get a hold of you.
Sure. So we have a number of ways people can get a hold of us. Probably the easiest is our website, parkinson.bc.ca. They can also email us at info@parkinson.bc.ca or call us on our toll-free line, 1-800-668-3330. And we welcome people calling us for information. And I just wanted to also mention that we have Superwalk coming up in September. And I know you said that this is replayed across Canada, but for Prince George specifically, may I say?
Sure, Dad.
It's happening on Saturday, September the 10th at... I'm probably going to mispronounce this, the Lahaidlitena Memorial Park by the Picnic Shelter.
The Clayton-A.
Clayton-A. Thank you. And it's registration's at 12, and the walk starts at 12:30.
Gene, thanks for coming on the show. It's been great having you.
I really appreciate the opportunity, Dave.
That's it for this week's show. I want to thank Alan Wishart, our producer, and producers across the country that are making the show available to you. Thank you for listening. Have a great, healthy week.
Together, we can improve our air quality.
Right! We can follow some easy tips for cleaner burning.
You're right, Bernie. Like burning a bright fire instead of choking the damper and your neighbors.
And splitting and stacking firewood in the spring so it can dry through the summer.
Ah, summer. If you have other heating options, don't burn on poor air quality days. Go to burnitclean.ca for more helpful tips from you, Bernie.
Yeah! Be green. Burn it clean.
Brought to you by the Prince George Air Improvement Roundtable.
The Aboriginal Business and Community Development Centre is once again presenting their Financial Literacy Workshop. Financial literacy helps you understand, analyze, and use information to make informed choices when managing your money. The final free workshop before fall is set for Monday, July 11th from 10:30 to 2:30. To register, call the ABDC office at 250-562-6325. For more information on the Aboriginal Business and Community Development's Financial Literacy Workshop, visit their website at abdc.bc.ca.
Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
The Prince George Toastmasters will be meeting at 6:45 on Thursday in the AIM High Building at 950 Carey Street. The Kidney Foundation Prince George Chapter holds its regular monthly meeting at 7 p.m. in the University Hospital of Northern BC. Mustard Seed Al-Anon holds its meeting at 7:30 p.m. on Thursday in St. Michael's Church, 1505 Fifth Avenue.
You've been listening to Health First on 93.1 CFIS-FM, heard Monday afternoons at 1. Your host, Dave Fuller, is a chartered herbalist and co-owner of Ava Maria Gifts and Health Foods and Mother Maria's Market. For a rebroadcast of programs, visit www.avamariahealth.com.